I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So you got to wonder, well, what does Charles McGonagall know about our nation's secrets? And if he knows, is there reason to believe now that the Russians know? Let's talk about this. Ron Layton is joining us once again, former member of federal law enforcement, former Secret Service agent, and had his own high-level security clearances at the Secret Service. Ron, welcome back to KDK Radio. Good to have you.
Mr. Mangino, thanks for having me back on KDK.
This story regarding Charles McGonagall, let's start here first. How serious is this? From your experiences, and what you know of this individual in this office in New York, what's the level of exposure? How concerned should the American public be?
So I think this particular case probably, you know, it represents the most egregious violation of trust in the history of the 114 years of the FBI. So you would have to go back to Robert Hansen to get something close to this. Now, Hansen was a different matter because Hansen was actually spying. McGonagall was not spying. He was committing criminal acts for money and basically on the payrolls of the Albanians and the Russians. But in terms of what's the level of egregiousness, it doesn't really get much worse than this. And, you know, Charlie had a TSSCI clearance. He was a special agent in charge of one of the preeminent units in the FBI, which is counterintelligence out of New York City. So everyone in this community knows that, you know, the New York office, they specialize in Russian matters. And Charlie was the king of New York. I'm calling him Charlie. I don't know him personally, but I did work with squad mates of Charlie's. And I can tell you that they, as well as myself, we are furious. Because what this does is it just erodes the institutional integrity of all of us who carried badges. And so I don't know what to say about this. I mean, actually, I've got quite a bit to say, but to think that someone at this level, this is not a rank and file agent. You know, an SAC in the Bureau is really high position. An SAC in New York is a really high position. But a special agent in charge running the elite counter-intel unit, counterintelligence, I mean, that is among the preeminent positions in the Bureau. Every organization has its elite positions. With the police, it's usually homicide. The Secret Service, it's the Presidential Protective Division. But in the FBI, it's the intelligence and espionage units. It is shocking that this has occurred.
How does something like this happen, Ron?
Well, that's a good question. I thought it might be interesting for the listeners to give you a little bit on what it takes to get a TSSCI background or a TSSCI clearance, which I had and maintained in the Secret Service for 26 years. So it starts off with a very thorough background investigation. My polygraph was 6 hours.
Wow.
And that's a little longer than average. Most of the polygraphs are running between 4.5 hours or so, 5.5. Mine was a little longer. And then once, you know, and they talked to people at Central Catholic, to Montana Tech, to where I worked. Before I joined the Secret Service, I worked, I was an electrical engineer, and I wrote software and did you know, those kinds of things. So they, of course, went to my previous employer. My point is this. Every 5 years, you've got to go through a re-up of your clearance. And so the detection mechanisms generally would happen during this recertification of your clearance. And this has got to be revamped. I mean, this is such a significant event. Basically, the Russians penetrated, you know, very high levels of the Bureau for money. And it's not even a lot of money based on what the intelligence folks, you know, if I could get access to something like that for $225,000, mm-hmm. which was one of his payments, that's pennies to a nation state. That's nothing. But the point is that the internal detection mechanisms have to be revamped. And you got to remember, this is what we do to other countries all the time. That's what intelligence is. You try to infiltrate other governments for the purpose of extracting information, and that's what happened with Charlie, with former SAC McGonigal.
It's really hard to believe that somebody would flip for $250,000. And I would think that those that are responsible for monitoring agents, and are there people who are responsible for monitoring those individuals for potential risks? Like, as an example, if you had an agent that had some level of security clearance and they got into financial trouble, a lot of debt or something, would that be a reason to be suspicious of them, to be concerned about them and what they may be willing to do and their vulnerabilities?
It would be. That's actually one of the things that comes up on five-year reviews all the time. So every 5 years, I had to go back in with all of my finances, all of my tax information. Folks would come around, knock on doors. Is he living above his means? All of that kind of stuff. That's everyone in the community that had a TSSCI clearance. And so that's one of the initial red flags is that, and that's one of the things that they got McGonigal on, is failure to report $225,000 payment. And that payment, makes it even more egregious, that occurred while he was still in the Bureau.
Wow.
And see, the thing, too, that really is shocking is that when you leave a high-level law enforcement job, whether it's a chief of police, a high-level federal job, there's this thing called corporate security that some of us want to take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it right, you can do very well in that environment. And I know the New York market very well. I've got a lot of buddies that left and now, quite frankly, are multimillionaires. But the point is that that same pathway would have very easily been open to Charlie. This is just, you know what this is? This is just stupid. And the fact that somebody at that level would engage in this level of stupidity is ridiculous.
Do you think that there was that could there have been some aspect of courting them to their way of thinking? Like I'm trying to think of, you said about how we do this to other nations, and so there's got to be more than just dollars that are being offered to others in other nations to give us information. There may be this aspect of grooming them and winning them over to the American way of thinking about things. And having them see the world from a different perspective, pro-American perspective. Do you think that's part of what may have happened with him and becoming a willing worker with the Russians?
So, Mr. Mangino, what you just talked about in the business is known as tradecraft. And so it's all about recruitment. It's all about don't you want to think about a better way? Well, maybe we can have a conversation and talk about how to do that. And so one of the things that happened with McGonigal is that he was able to get an internship at the NYPD for another one of his associates in the intelligence unit. I mean, it's just crazy. It's everything. In other words, the tradecraft that we routinely use on others was done to him. So in other words, he should have seen this coming. This is what infuriated everybody. You should have known better. And this was one of the comments that was levied by one of the assistant United States attorneys who is prosecuting this case.
Right. But he should have known better. Maybe he did know better. he just really turned. Is it possible that it wasn't that he was fooled and duped and was stupid, but that he genuinely turned and his allegiances went from the United States and he decided to become a traitor to this country?
No. Well, that could be part of it. But number 1A, that might be 1B. But you know what 1A is? He's stupid.
Okay.
So he made $190,000 a year as an SES.
Yes.
He would have left his job and got a corporate job for $250,000 a year in New York City. To say nothing of his thrift savings plan and his pension.
Right.
And so if we're, God bless us all, if we're lucky enough to live till 90, that's $10 million. So the point is, this is where this just, it makes no sense whatsoever. It's just dumb. Now, I have told you before, when we've talked about law enforcement officers, I don't care where you work, that have gotten into trouble, there are two components, judgment and competence. Mm-hmm. This is an error of the first order with respect to judgment.
Are you concerned at all, or do you believe there's a reason to be concerned that intel that he had access to is now in the hands of the Russians? Should we be operating with that presumption now at the FBI and other intelligence agencies in the country?
Oh, I am certain that people within the CIA, so the CIA runs the majority of the human cases, which is information, intelligence that's involved from humans, the recruitment of sources. They cannot do it and operate in the United States because it's not in their charter, but they do this on a global basis. They are the premier agency that does that. I can promise you that they are furious because McGonagall would have known all of the mechanisms that we do business, tradecraft. So if we've got time here, where we were talking about the importance of the retention of these documents, mm-hmm. whether it's a former president, whoever it is, this kind of information, this is what's present on these documents. Number one, what we know, and number two, how we got it. The how we got it is the gold of the intelligence world, and that's where people get killed. And so that's why, you know, I've said, yes, someone can declassify something, mm-hmm. but you see how complex this is? Can you see why you would not want to declassify this? Because of all of the people, programs, and methodologies that you would put in immediate danger.
Ron, do me a favor. Hold tight there because there's a lot more I want to talk to you about. Do you have time?
Absolutely.
All right. Ron Layton joining us on the Disc Institute of Pittsburgh Newsline. More coming up on the issue of intel, more on Charles McGonagall, more on President Biden and his documents, Vice President Mike Pence and his, Trump on his, and a whole lot more. It's all straight ahead on KDK Radio. I'm Angino, Ron Layton joining us on the Disc Institute of Pittsburgh Newsline. And Ron, what did you think when you got word that we found documents now, or Mike Pence found documents at his residence after being vice president and being out of office for, oh my goodness, a year and a half now?
My immediate thought is that the American people, who are now getting much more of a glimpse into this classified intelligence world, you know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to say to yourself, well, now, wait a minute. Whatever mechanism you guys have in the government that is responsible for tracking these documents mm-hmm. needs to be revamped, because everybody's going to say the same thing. I couldn't take out a library book without them being on me. Now, of course, that's a very simplified analogy. But I just think, you know, I try to think in terms of what the American public is going to think. And they're going to think, I don't get it.
Right.
I just don't get it. And at the beginning of the segment, I talked about the general erosion of our most revered institutions because of this kind of misbehavior. And so I do think you are now seeing, when someone shows up with these documents, you're also hearing immediately, I didn't know I had it. And I think, you know, it's important for people, you know, there's a mens rea component of criminal charging. In other words, there's got to be knowledge and intent. And I think there are people who are, you know, you would try to separate. Is there a difference between case one with the former president, case two with the current president, and now case three with the former vice president? And that mens rea component seems to be at least one differentiator.
Do you think that this is an issue at the executive level only when we're talking about presidents and vice presidents? It doesn't seem as though we have this issue with senators, or at least not at this point, with those in the Senate or the House that may have access to the same or similar documents.
So if you're asking, do I think it's an issue, does it happen more than we think? Yeah, I do.
Do you think it's beyond the executive branch?
Likely, yeah, likely.
Do you think when it comes to the executive branch, that it's more than just the presidents and vice presidents, that there may be others within the executive branch that may have documents too that we haven't properly tracked?
So, and it's hard to provide the context here, but the TS documents, every TS document that I ever took out of a skiff and maybe had to transport or whatever, those documents are serialized. And so that's how NARA or anybody else or people in the community might know, hey, this is missing. But some of these other documents that are at lower levels, at the secret level or the confidential level, those documents don't quite have the same level of control. So if the general question is, are more of those documents out there? I would imagine so.
Wow. How concerned do you think we should be about this? I mean, we've gone this long, and I guess the American people can say, well, I don't know what's happened poorly, that it's been a risk and some negative things have happened. Is it something to be greatly concerned about, or is it just something that is more of a political embarrassment at this point than anything else when it comes to Biden and Pence especially? Do me a favor, if you could. Hold on. I got to get to news headlines. We'll come back with more with Ron in a moment on KDK Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Angino. Ron Layton joining us, former member of federal law enforcement, nearly three decades at the Secret Service, his own top secret security clearance, and he's giving us some insights on a number of stories. One out of New York with Charles McGonigal, head of the FBI in New York for counterintelligence, insights on the documents found in the possession of President Biden when he was documents to go back to when he was vice president and even a member of the U.S. Senate. And now over the weekend, the announcement of former Vice President Mike Pence having documents, that news being made to the public a week after they were first discovered. Ron, do you think that this is a national security issue at this point, or is it more a political one when it comes to the vice presidents and what they did with documents at those times?
I think generally speaking, therein lies the problem. It is absolutely a national security matter, but unfortunately, because of the politics of the day, it has been merged with a political matter. And you asked me, was I concerned? So we are seeing a mass shooting every other day, and we are seeing a heightened sense of political rhetoric in the last, you know, at least the last 5 years that we have never seen before. My point is we are starting to normalize things that are not normal. So the disclosure of top secret information to a foreign power and just, you know, saying, well, don't worry about it, everybody does it. No, it is not normal. The definition of a top secret document is that if that information was disclosed, it would cause grave harm to the United States. So the point is, think of everything. I'm picking on McGonigal, don't mean to, but the point is, it's a glimpse into the intelligence world, completely dissimilar from cop world, I might add. But everything that he knew, all of those things, now that information is in the hands of foreign powers, quite a few things. Again, that information is the type of information that would be on a top secret document. And that's just, you know, human intelligence is an important, but it's a small piece of intelligence. There's all kinds of different areas in our intelligence networks. But the point is, and getting back to the original question, am I concerned? Absolutely. This is not normal and represents a grave security threat to our great nation.
Is it possible that Charles McGonigal, as the head of the New York Office for Counterintelligence of the FBI, would be able to have access to know what documents were discovered at Trump's house in Mar-a-Lago, what documents were discovered with Biden? He's gotten into trouble after the Pence thing. Is it possible for him to know these things? And then is it then possible then in your mind that the Russians then know and whoever else the Russians would want to share this information with?
It is highly unlikely that he would have any knowledge of that. I would say that that possibility is near zero. One thing that's odd about the intelligence community, so for example, when I worked at the White House, I worked on, you know, compartmentalized top secret information. But there were times where there was something so sensitive and so compartmentalized that, you know, you go into a special room, you sign your life away again, and then you are read into a piece of information that has a very short shelf life. This information is only good for 2 weeks, and you are too. Then you've got to come back and re-up that. And I'm giving you that story only to suggest that there are incredible levels of segmentation within the intelligence community. So would he have known about that stuff? Highly doubtful.
Okay.
But what he would have known about is the vast majority of Russian matters. And what makes this even worse is that he supervised that. So you end up saying, well, how could this happen? Well, he would have been the individual who decides, you know, what cases get opened, what cases get closed. He would have great latitude to be able to say, no, we're closing that case for the reasons that he deemed appropriate. But there's great compartmentalization within the intelligence community.
So his ability...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so his ability to have that level of control about whether or not to go after an oligarch or to not, to go after particular assets or to not, to go after prosecutions or not, even since the invasion of Ukraine. I mean, there are a lot of things that are being done, I'm guessing, that would be investigated and trying to be determined and researched and shell corporations and all these different things in order to properly try to contain and even in some cases gain assets for Ukraine of these oligarchs. He would be a part of all of that.
He'd absolutely be a part of that. One of the charges in the charging document is the violation of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. And so he had actually gotten a payment from an Albanian source in the amount of $225,000. And this was all about trying to investigate Deperska's rivals, as well as get Deperska off the sanctions list. And, of course, everything that goes along with that, conspiracy, as well as failing to report all of that money that showed up in his bank account via a shell company.
Okay. There's one thing I want to backtrack on, if we could, and I want to go back to Biden and Pence and tie it in with what you mentioned about a shelf life of information. Are there sometimes documents that the information that would be marked as somehow classified is only going to be that, and it's only important to preserve it as that for a short period of time, or is once it's classified, everything, and I mean everything that would be classified, go through a long, extended process until it finally becomes declassified?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. And, you know, you've got such a broad base of different forms of intelligence. And so generally, most documents after 25 years are going to be declassified. But there's some things that are so sensitive, again, that goes to sources and methods,
yes,
that will likely never be prosecuted. And here's the other thing, too. There are some things that, and remember, the intelligence community has absolutely no interest in prosecuting anybody in criminal court. That's not what they do. They have a completely different set of rules. But some of the things and some of the methods that they might use to ascertain either a piece of computer code, a piece of information from a source, maybe somebody that was in a foreign country was tortured and gave us a piece of information. We saw some of this during the Bush administration. But the point is that some things will never, ever be declassified, ever. And if it comes down to having to use that piece of information in criminal court, it'll never see a courtroom, ever.
Ever.
Never.
Oh, wow. Wow. So the story continues with what they ultimately discover. And my guess is there are a lot of things regarding the McGonigal case that we will never know because we're not supposed to know. And I'm also guessing the same thing applies to what's in the documents that Trump held, what's in the documents that Biden held, what's in the what is in the documents that Pence held.
So we got a huge glimpse of information, and I'm surprised that the Justice Department didn't redact this, but we got a big glimpse of information with respect to the Trump case. If you looked at the application for a search warrant and looked at all of the markings that they were looking for, they were very robust, and some of those were nuclear markings, nuclear intelligence. That stuff will never be declassified. But the point is, looking for that stuff,
yes,
is pretty significant.
So that when they went into Trump, they weren't just looking for a particular number of documents that were of different classifications. They went in there looking for specific documents with specific details, convinced the judge that those documents were at this place, and then they found what they were looking for.
Oh, they had to. Because that's where on the application for the search warrant, when you look at the items to be seized, they had specifically what they were looking for. And remember I told you that some of these documents were serialized?
Yes.
So they knew what was missing. And so that's the only way that you would have been able to put those documents or that you were looking for that stuff on the application of a search warrant. And that may be another one of the stark differences that we may never get to see from the former, you know, the current president case, which is very different because, again, that's a consent search, which is why I kind of had some difficulty with another one of your experts calling it a crime scene.
Right.
I thought that was a little hyperbolic.
Well, because that would make Pence's house a crime scene now, too, right?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. We'll go over this. When an application for a search warrant is signed by a federal judge, the investigators can go to a residence, they will freeze that scene, and they are freezing a crime scene.
Okay.
They're extracting the information, they will unfreeze that scene when they leave. And so when it's a consent, it's just a little bit different. And the wording crime scene, particularly for a voluntary consent search, I just think it's a little it's a little hyperbolic.
And in fairness, there wasn't really a consent search of Pence's place. My understanding is that we found documents, and here's where they are, and then somebody came over there and gathered them and took them back.
That's right.
Somebody from the FBI came over and gathered them. Do you think there would be reason for any aspect of a special counsel?
You're getting out of my wheelhouse.
I'll talk to my legal professor about that one then.
Yeah, you're getting out of my wheelhouse.
All right. I'll stick to intelligence issues from now on. Ron Layton, former member of federal law enforcement, former member of the Secret Service. How many years did you have a security clearance?
26 years. I had a TS SCI compartmentalized clearance.
My goodness. Am I going to get called in to talk to somebody at some point because of all this interview time I spend with you? Am I going to get a knock at the door? I just want to prepare myself and prepare my wife. That's all.
You can always say that if you want to bribe this guy, start talking about Minio's pizza.
Ron Layton, thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Thank you. Be well.
All right. You too. Back with more in a moment. I'm Mangino, KDK Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.